Victoria congressman calls it quits, leading to a frenzied scramble to replace him. Quinton Lucas puts us out of our misery, ending a months-long flirtation with a congressional run. So he's not going to be a short-timer after all, the Jackson County executive breaking a pledge to leave at the end of the year. The long-awaited Rock Island Bridge finally opens, and the symphony comes clean on big plans for a 4,000-seat concert venue just off the plaza. It's all next on Week in Review.
Week in Review is made possible through the generous support of Bob and Marlise Gourley, the Courtney S. Turner Charitable Trust, John H. Mize, and Bank of America N.A. co-trustees. The Francis Family Foundation, through the discretionary fund of David and Janice Francis. And by viewers like you. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Nick Haynes, and thanks for joining us again on our weekly journey through the most impactful, confusing, and downright head-scratching local news stories. Hopping on board the Week in Review bus with us this week, lead political reporter for the Kansas City Star, Kason Bayless, former Star reporter Dave Helling, from KCUR News, local government reporter Savannah Hawley Bates, and at the helm of our Metro's newest newspaper, Next Page KC, Eric Wesson. Now, at a time when our elected leaders seem to want to cling on to power forever, a rare local congressional seat has opened up as Sam Graves, who represents parts of North Kansas City, calls it quits. He is the 57th House member to announce he'll retire from the chamber at the end of his term. That's the highest number in a decade. His decision triggers a political frenzy to replace him. More on that in just a moment. But did we get a convincing explanation, Kason, as why he's leaving now? He's not retirement age, he's 62.
Sure. We haven't heard, you know, this exact reason, but I think you can look at sort of the political environment that's sort of surrounding this retirement. You know, Representative Graves has sort of amassed a lot of influence in Congress in his 26 years there. I think there's a broader expectation that Democrats could take the U.S. House in the upcoming midterms. In that situation, you know, Representative Graves would have to give up his chairmanship of the House Transportation Committee. I do think that probably played a role in this decision.
Yeah. Is there anything more to the story, Dave?
No, I think that encapsulates it quite well. Even if the Republicans were to maintain control of the House, it's quite likely that Sam Graves would have been removed from his chairmanship in the Transportation Committee anyway, because Republicans like to rotate the leadership positions. And so whatever happens in November, it appeared likely that Sam Graves would lose the only real job he ever wanted in Congress, which is to run that committee. He wasn't interested in leadership. He turned down an opportunity to run for the U.S. Senate from Missouri against Claire McCaskill several years ago. So for all of those reasons, and for the fact that he can now make an enormous amount of money as a lobbyist, particularly given his knowledge of transportation issues, I think it's not a huge surprise, although the timing was and the circumstances, I think, surprised a lot of people, but the actual decision was not.
We bring in a lot of politicians from both sides of the state line. I could never get him on the show after all that time, over 20 years, never appeared on the program, could never get him to appear. Now we're seeing all these stories, Savannah, about how his fingertips were on almost all these big projects we've had. I mean, what was his influence?
He was in Congress for such a long time that he amassed a lot of power in that way. He didn't really feel the need, obviously, to go out and do town halls, to go talk to voters, to go on shows like this one. I think that'll be an interesting part of the race for his seat, for his replacement. Talk show host Chris DeGaulle is running, and also City Council member Nathan Willett, who is sort of already teeing this up to be a very heated election. So I'm interested to see where that goes.
Let's take a look at that. Here's Chris DeGaulle's announcement.
President Trump is going to need all the reinforcements he can get in Washington. And that's why I've decided I'm going to leave my show. I'm going to leave this microphone, and I'm going to enter the arenas today.
And Chris DeGaulle, the conservative talk show host, isn't the only one. As Savannah mentions, Kansas City Councilman Nathan Willett has also thrown his hat into the ring, which is interesting, Eric, because Willett was just on Stegall's radio show this past week, and they were all buddy-buddy. They didn't talk about this beforehand. Hey, which one of us is going to run?
I suppose they didn't. It's going to be interesting to see how they go against each other now, because I've always thought they were cool. They were good friends. But now I guess we're getting ready to see politics makes strange bedfellows, they say, and this is going to be one of those terms.
Longtime political consultant Jeff Rowe is the fulcrum around which all of this circulates. Rowe really began his career and based his career on his relationship with Sam Graves. Chris DeGaulle, I think, and my memory fades in my old age, used to work for Jeff Rowe, and so knows Jeff Rowe well, and so you get the sense that some of this was orchestrated, that when Sam Graves decided to quit, Jeff Rowe knew, turned to DeGaulle, made the endorsement. And the other thing Nathan Willett has to keep in mind is, we've pointed out, that the 6th District is huge. It's really, people think it's just North Kansas City, but it actually stretches to the Mississippi River. I mean, it is a massive district, so it means that Nathan Willett will not be well recognized, say, east of the middle of the state, and so he'll have a lot of work to do out there.
Wouldn't that be true of Chris DeGaulle, though? I mean, has there...
Well, Chris DeGaulle has been on the radio, right. Okay. Which helps him in terms of particularly in rural Missouri. And again, Jeff Rowe's connection will help him enormously, not to mention Sam Graves' connection in some of those counties that, say, someone like Nathan Willett has not been in.
This is all on the Republican side, of course, but what about Democrats? Is this a chance now for Democrats to pick up this seat? Before I get our guests to respond to that, remember when Kansas City Mayor Kay Barnes took on Sam Graves? And he eviscerated her with negative ads that actually got a lot of national attention about what he called her San Francisco values.
In San Francisco, Nancy Pelosi's throwing a party for Kay Barnes, a ritzy California fundraiser celebrating Barnes' San Francisco-style values. Yes to same-sex marriage. Yes to abortion. Yes to amnesty for illegal immigrants. Kay Barnes is raising hundreds of thousands of dollars from West Coast liberals by promoting their values, not ours. Big City Mayor Kay Barnes and Nancy Pelosi celebrating their San Francisco values.
I'm Sam Graves. I approve this message.
Remember that, Eric?
Yes, I do. I remember that campaign.
You know, it's interesting because Sam Graves today is being viewed as this non-assuming, quiet, not about all the theatrics. This is over 20 years ago. This was a kind of an aggressive campaign ad.
Yes, it was. And then they started having these off political groups run these campaign ads so they could say, hey, I didn't know anything about it. That's what the off-brand political groups were doing.
Kaysen, a lot of the attention again on this week is on the Republicans, what they're going to do, who's going to fill that seat. Do Democrats have a chance this election cycle, or is this considered such a safe Republican seat these days?
Sure. I mean, there's always a chance. I don't want to say there isn't a chance, but Democrats do face an uphill battle, regardless of which map is used. I think there's still this outstanding question of, you know, whether this new gerrymandered congressional map is going to be used in this upcoming election, or if the 2022 map is going to be used. Either way, I think a lot of the polling shows that Democrats will face an uphill battle in this race.
Now, after months of flirting with a run for Congress, Kansas City Mayor Quinton Lucas is finally putting us out of our misery. He is not going to run against Congressman Mark Alford in Missouri's 4th District. I told you it was a big political week. But he's kept this going for months. I mean, was there some new nugget of information that came out this week, Kaysen?
Yeah, I think it's still kind of an outstanding question of, like, when he actually made this decision not to run. I mean, he told me as late as last week that he was still interested in this race. You know, there is this poll from Representative Mark Alford's campaign, which that would be his potential opponent if he were going to run. And that poll did show, you know, Alford defeating Lucas pretty soundly.
So he's going to be the mayor then, Quinton Lucas, for the rest of his term, which will expire next year in August. But he still says, oh, I'm still interested in future election. Is there a better fit for him if it's not this race?
No, everybody thought this was the race for him to win. And
particularly this year.
Right. And it was like, you know, he had been kind of selling wolf tickets at the beginning, and then it kind of petered down to the day before the election. Here's what the issue that people have that I talked to this morning and earlier this week. The fact that he waited to the last minute to do it, so now Alford doesn't really have a good opponent, whereas somebody could have put a campaign together, done some information, and probably gave Alford a challenge.
I think it is instructive that the Democrats are, in essence, giving up on the 4th District, potentially, and giving up on the 6th District in what is obviously going to be a Democratic year. That suggests their polling shows that Republicans really have strong control of rural Missouri, and that's what's involved here.
I was pretty surprised that he didn't.
Well, talk about surprises, then. The man temporarily picked to lead Jackson County after the recall election of Frank White is now rethinking his political future. 5 months after making a pledge that he would not seek election to a full term as county executive. Phil Lavoda has changed his mind. He's now added his name to the ballot. Is this the biggest U-turn in local political history? This is Lavoda 5 months ago.
I will not be a candidate for county executive for the four-year term. I think it's very important for the interim to be focused on fixing what's gone wrong in the county executive's office and not campaigning. It takes away from it. I want to be laser focused on doing what I'm doing. So I have committed to that before publicly to a lot of people. I signed an affidavit. I'm not going to. I don't care who comes along and says, hey, you've done a great job. I'm not here to find the trappings of the position and think, oh, I want to do this. You will not hear me doing that. And I've committed that. And I want everyone to hold me to it because it's just not going to happen.
Could he have been in any way more emphatic? And then change his mind. Should any of us then, as voters, ever trust a politician who says they want to be there just say one term?
Well, I think this is Jackson County's worst kept secret that he was going to run for county executive for a full term. He said many, many times in many different places that he was.
So nothing changed this week. This has always been the plan, you think?
Things officially changed. You know, he said at the beginning of his appointment that he wasn't going to run. But remember, that was something that the county legislature wanted to hear from this new appointed county executive to fill in the rest of Frank White Jr.'s term. They wanted someone who, you know, wouldn't be running, wouldn't be politicking in the office. Whether or not Phil Lavoda has done that in his months so far is sort of in the eye of the beholder. But, you know, he said in that clip that no information could change his mind. He said on Facebook in an announcement that information did change his mind and that so many voters want him to stay in this position that he's going to let them decide.
Is that going to be the campaign commercial for all of his opponents? From Daron McGee was in that race, the Lee Summit mayor who has now put his name in this race. Is that the ad? We just played it for you.
Oh, I definitely think so. I think it's a very easy thing for opponents in this race to sort of immediately latch on to. Like, as you mentioned, like, he was very emphatic, almost to the point where people weren't even asking him if he was going to, you know, run for re-election. He was kind of volunteering that at the beginning. So yeah, I think it's definitely going to play a role in this race.
And with this election now in November, with all these other candidates getting in, including, again, the Lee Summit mayor, doesn't that put the pressure now on the Royals to make a quick decision? Because we could have a new leader in Jackson County in a few months, and they'd be starting from scratch again, trying to negotiate this.
Well, yeah, although they started with scratch when Frank White left, so they went back at least on some of the things they needed to discuss. And the exact role of the county in this discussion is not completely clear to me, Nick. I think the discussions are much more with Kansas City, and if you believe John Sherman, with North Kansas City in Kansas, which...
Or in Kansas.
Trust, right. Trust continues to be an issue in all of our local politics. So I'm not sure that will put any great momentum to trying to get a deal done other than other public pressure. I will say that the idea that the public demanded that Phil Lavoda run for office is one of the oldest tropes in politics. It goes back to George Washington, you know. I really don't want this job, but you're forcing me to take it. I guess I'll run.
I talked to Phil a couple of weeks ago, and he was still undecided. But when I was having conversations this morning with people, the concept was, hey, the unions, the labor people, they told him to do it or else. And I'm like, or else what? And that was the end of the conversation. Yeah. But he felt like he's done a good job. I think he's felt like when he got into it, he didn't know there was as much that needed to be done as needed to be done, and that's his exit ramp.
Now, in other news this week, 3 years later than advertised, the Rock Island Bridge finally opened. In addition to a delayed start, the price tag went up from its original price of $5 million to $17 million. The 120-year-old span linking Kansas City's West Bottoms to KCK is being promoted as the world's first entertainment district over a river. What was the verdict from those who got to cross the bridge for the first time this week? How is this being viewed, Savannah?
I think people are really excited for it. It's sort of one of those things in a very heated time in the metro. People are like, oh, cool, you know, this is fun and we can go hang out here. I think maybe the delays kind of, in a strange way, helped people's imagination of the bridge. It built excitement for it, and they're excited that's finally open. I think it's sort of a novelty in that way.
And a lot of people thought this was never going to happen. This is a harebrained scheme. Why are they even thinking about doing it? And now it's there. And I spoke to some people who got to see it early on, and they were just impressed by how large it was. It looks even bigger than it does even in the video that we just shown. So this shows the possibility that anything can happen in Kansas City, Eric?
Pretty much, because I didn't think it would ever... ever manifest, but I guess there's a need and a demand for it, and people, the novelty of it being new has gotten people, into it. I just, I'm going to pass on it for right
now. No, but okay, but I see that on Saturdays they're doing free yoga sessions on the bridge. Can we expect you to be one of the participants in that, Eric?
I want to see how it works out first.
Dave, is that you? Okay.
No, yeah, yoga will be a big thing for me. I think anyone okay. can watch this show and know how much I'm into exercise. But what will be interesting is whether the bridge operation has repeat customers. Everyone is going to go once. Right. Just to see. Mm-hmm. And but how did they make this work? And boy, this is interesting, and the river is under our feet. But will you go back? And I think that's the central challenge in terms of entertainment and food and all the other things we do, and we'll see how that works a year or two from now.
Well, it was once Kansas City's largest private company. Now, who's left? Oracle, the tech company that took over hometown Cerner, has announced the largest layoffs in the company's history. And more than 500 of its Kansas City workers got a rude awakening this week, an email telling them they're out of a job. It's been 10 years since the company opened its innovation campus on the site of the old Bannister Mall. And didn't they get $1.75 billion in tax incentives to make it happen? And weren't they promising to add 15,000 jobs to the site, not shrink the workforce, Eric?
Yeah, and none of that has came into existence. They were going to do all this development around it. And I guess Oracle could say, well, that was Cerner's deal. So we didn't have to. Yeah, that's a different company. We didn't have to do it. But a lot of that development that they were supposed to do around there just hasn't manifest. They got a couple of apartments. And the school district, I think, out in that area that was supposed to get money, I think they really got the short end of the stick on that.
Are there lessons here on this, Dave?
Well, there are many lessons for Kansas City, which is if you depend too much on any one company for employment and revenue, you're bound to be disappointed in this world. I mean, that we live in an economy now where changes like this happen all the time, and artificial intelligence, which is at the root of what they're doing at Oracle / Cerner, will have an effect like this on thousands of businesses, arguably. And so get ready. This isn't the first time you're going to see headlines like this. The other lesson,
because they were pivoting towards artificial intelligence.
And they're using the savings from these layoffs to build out data centers like the one that they're thinking about in Independence, or someone is thinking about in Independence. So this headline will repeat itself. The other thing is handing out tax incentives can sometimes backfire, and it did here.
By the way, another big economic news this week, with average gas prices across America topping $4 a gallon, states across the country are now considering suspending state fuel taxes to help drivers out. Georgia Governor Brian Kemp has just signed a 60-day gas tax suspension into law. Can we expect Kasen, Laura Kelly and Mike Keogh to follow in Kansas and Missouri?
I'm not sure about that. Definitely on the Missouri side. If you look at sort of Mike Kehoe's history, as lieutenant governor back in 2021, he was a supporter of the gas tax. I do think he has his hands full right now with trying to eliminate Missouri's income tax right now. That might be too much to add to his plate right now.
But hey, what about an issue to show you're a hero to the public? Wouldn't it be a substantial benefit if Kansas suspends its fuel tax? That would save drivers 24 cents a gallon. Savannah, in Missouri, it would be even more, closer to 30 cents a gallon. Wouldn't Kelly and Kehoe be viewed as, oh my God, how amazing they are as political leaders if they're making that difference with voters?
You know, I think temporarily maybe, because things are so hard right now for people as gas prices rise, as other costs rise. But what you have to think about in suspending taxes like this is how it's going to impact the state's budget moving forward. No one wants to be, you know, a Sam Brownback type of legacy in suspending taxes like this. And I think when they're staring down the barrel of tougher budgets in years ahead, eliminating a revenue source like this might not be their top priority.
Just quickly, two things. First, if you lower the gas tax, eventually you're going to have to raise it, and people are going to go around and say, hey, Mike Keogh raised the gas tax 30 cents a gallon. So that's always going to be a problem. And then this is the dirty little secret of energy, Nick. Gas prices in Kansas and Missouri are among the lowest in the nation and have been historically for many. And so we're not feeling the pain they're feeling in California or Florida. or even some other East and West Coast cities. So the impetus to do it in either state seems to be less than it might be other.
But you and so, you know, even in European countries, of course, well, even at $4 a gallon, that's very cheap when you pay $9 and more per gallon.
And you know,
in,
we pay about
a lot of European countries.
$3.30, $3.40 a gallon. Eric. That's not killer.
But it's a difference of whether you're getting pinched or slapped.
Yeah.
And if you have a budget and your budget is set for this, any break that you can get.
And this would be a popular move, don't you think?
I would think so. But like Dave said, but when you raise it back up again, it was like, hey, wait a minute.
All right. Well, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago. Now it's official. The Kansas City Symphony revealing designs for a new 4,000-seat performing arts venue next to the plaza.
And so this feels right that Kansas City should have all kinds of music venues. We have big ones, we have small ones, now we have one in the middle that's an indoor year-round music facility that'll bring all kinds of exciting artists, new artists to Kansas City that we haven't had.
Well, there's still lots of skepticism, of course, about why this is needed when the symphony already has a state-of-the-art home at the Kauffman Center. But is that what is missing? No places with 4,000 seats and Kansas City missing out on acts that would have come here anyway?
I thought the Kauffman Center was great. Great acoustics, great atmosphere, environment. I thought that was, you couldn't get any better than that, but evidently I don't know a whole lot because they're going to build a new place.
Can we put on screen for a moment? Here are some of the venues around our metro and their sizing, and you'll see from this graphic here that we have, there isn't anything in that 4,000 range. I mean, when we look at the Kauffman Theater, that's 1,800, Helzberg Hall, 1,600 seats. There isn't anything in this area.
Well, right, but, you know, you've got places with 6,000 or 7,000 seats that could seat 4,000 people, if that's how many tickets they sell. And I do think that there is some sense among the public that this seems to be a place where maybe the spending is not as essential as it might be in other places. No one, to my knowledge, has said yet how much this thing is going to cost. Yeah. And there are lots of needs in Kansas City, and whether we need a new place for musical acts is at least open to some.
By the way, this would be right next to where the Kansas City Plaza Library is, which are just off the plaza. But they say, well, we have the money to make this happen, to start the whole project. So should we even care if they're paying for it themselves?
They never pay for it themselves.
Right. It's going to impact, at least in some ways. And the way development goes in Kansas City, often they're seeking tax abatements of some sort or tax breaks. And so I think in one way or another, this will impact the residents of Kansas City.
I do also love anything new happens in Kansas City. The big question, of course, when you look at the comments on these stories is parking. This is going to be a nightmare. Where are they going to park, you know?
Yeah, well, apparently there is plenty of parking, structured parking nearby. To alleviate some of that problem. And, of course, the streetcar plays a role because the assumption is people might be able to walk to this venue from the streetcar stop. But of all the needs in the Kansas City region, the idea that a 4,600-seat theater is at the top of the list, I think some people would question that. If they pay for it out of their own pocket, you're right. There can't be that much of a concern.
They're going to need infrastructure, sidewalks. They're going to need sewers.
And those details will become available soon.
All of those things.
Yep.
Well, they can join it with the ask for a new stadium, like we had that bi-state tax with the sports and arts venues. Remember that?
Put the music thing right behind the dugout and you'll be fine.
All right. Now, when you put a program like this together every week, you can't get to every story grabbing the headlines. What was the big local story we missed?
Another round of No Kings rallies brings thousands onto the streets of Kansas City. The protest also shuts down the streetcar line, prompting concerns about how Kansas City will handle crowds during the World Cup. A mini liquor bottle ban is still on pause after major pushback from convenience store owners who say it'll cost hundreds of jobs and is discriminatory because it doesn't apply citywide. Mayor Lucas says the measure will reduce crime and public disorder. Kansas getting ready to make it a crime for citizens to come within 25 feet of an ICE agent if they've been told to back off. The measure is now on Governor Kelly's desk. Another high-profile departure from the Kansas City art scene, the executive director of the ballet on the way out after less than 3 years in the job. Baseball is officially back. It's the week of the Royals' home opener, and they win. And last call for World Cup tickets, the cheapest seat for the first game in Kansas City, $802.
All righty, Kasen, did you pick one of those stories or something completely different?
I did want to pivot briefly to Sam Graves' retirement. I think it's hard to talk about the departure of Sam Graves without also talking about this effort to push out Representative Emanuel Cleaver during the upcoming midterms. I think if that effort succeeds, Kansas City's congressional representation is going to look a lot different, and I think that's going to have a major impact on Kansas City's sort of relationship with the federal government moving forward. It's a lot of experience going out the door.
Eric.
The shot bottles, the liquor bottles, very interesting concept that they're presenting as far as connecting it to crime. And there's no real connection to crime. But one of the interesting things—
Even though they say they looked at other states, like Washington State, who have been doing this, and they say it does.
Well, here's what they don't mention. Before they went to those single-serve issues, they put a moratorium on liquor stores and liquor licenses. That's what Kansas City hasn't done. But I also learned this week that the law requires them to go through the state. The state regulates it. Anheuser-Busch is extremely powerful. Ask Mike Kehoe, look at his campaign contributions from that. They're not going to be in a position to change a regulation.
Which is perhaps why they keep kicking the can down the road in getting this to a vote in the city council.
That is correct.
All righty, Savannah.
People should be looking at, the KCATA's budget from the city of Kansas City is lower than what's needed to maintain bus service in the area. We're going to be seeing cuts to buses, and I think we need to start, like, the agency and other municipalities need to start looking ahead to what stable regional funding source can prevent these sorts of things from happening year after year.
Yeah, and you mentioned recently that even the bus riders are now forming a union, which seems very puzzling, but that's where we are with regards to that, Dave.
In his interviews on opening day, John Sherman said something new that was subtly important on the stadiums, which was we need to have a public financing package in place before the announcement is made. Well, that's an astonishing ask, because it, in essence, if it involves a vote of the people or some sort of local general tax, it means you would ask the voters to do that before you would announce where it's going, and that doesn't seem possible to me. So that imbroglio continues.
And on that, we will say our week has been reviewed, courtesy of KCY's Savannah Hawley-Bates and the stars Kasen Bayliss. From Next Page KC, Eric Wesson, and Mr. Kansas City Stack on Substack, news icon Dave Helling. And I'm Nick Haynes. From all of us here at Kansas City PBS, be well, keep calm, and carry on.